Hello and welcome to a crisis edition of the Managing Madrid podcast. This is your host, Keon Sobani. Gabe Lestro is on vacation. I'm joined by the perfect podcast host for this podcast, our beloved Om Arvind. Om, how are you?
I'm doing good. Karim Benzema fanboy 123 right here.
We're here to talk about Real Madrid drawing 2-2 with the reincarnation of AC Milan 1988, aka Marcelinho's Valencia, who definitely took some superhero potions before this game, as they typically do. All credit to them. Like, honestly, like, the whole world was raving about Real Madrid and how unstoppable they are. And I think credit to Valencia, who really struck, you know, just stuck to their guns. I thought defensively they were incredible. Condogbia had an amazing game. Like, vertically, they were compact. They kind of hedged off. They didn't press high, and they were really impenetrable for large parts of the game. And when they did get penetrated, they weren't, you know, sweating much, because Real Madrid just weren't taking their chances.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty fair assessment. I think there were two main parts to the game from us, which was, I was okay with our chance creation. Obviously it could have been better in some ways, but really it was our finishing that was the problem. Benzema had, you know, several good chances that he just he didn't put away at all. And then there was the defensive side of our game, which isn't being talked about enough, which I thought was really, really, really poor.
Yeah.
I thought not playing Marcos Llorente was a mistake. I felt a defensive midfielder would have really helped us in this situation. And I think Casemiro, who was again kind of put into an unfair position by being played as a center back, which he's not used to, cost us. I thought he really did his best. There were a couple of times where he saved us. But, you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't the best performance from him, because he simply isn't comfortable guarding the spaces that he has to. I mean, our compactness issues were horrible. Our midfield, you know, from, you know, the opposition box to our own box, we're not guarding the right spaces. When we were pressing, we were trying to prepare for the counter press. Our central midfielders were all over the place, and Valencia just kept countering and countering and countering and going one versus one with Nacho and Casemiro. And, you know, that combined with our lack of finishing cost us.
Yeah, I think on any given day, like, the fact that we were conceding as many chances as we did defensively in transition, I think that wouldn't have mattered if we had taken those chances. Usually we're in a situation where we can just say, hey, we can outscore you. Today was, you know, really, really kind of out of the ordinary for me. When I was looking at the lineup, first of all, I think we have to get this out of the way. Llorente really has to get loaned out at this point. I think if this is a situation where, you know, where no, we have two anchors, Or one pure anchor, really, and that's Llorente. Kovacic is not a pure anchor, but he can play there. Both of them were on the bench. And to me, I looked at it and I said, okay, well, that wouldn't have been what I expected. I would have expected at least one of them gets into the game. But it was clear to me that Zidane just said, let's pack the midfield and dominate possession, and that's the way we're going to mask Casemiro. We can dominate the ball, defend with the ball at our feet, and make sure Casemiro isn't in these situations where, you know, but having said all that, I think he did okay. Again, like, he was put in an unfair situation, like you said. He had some rash challenges, but also some really good ones. If we go down and break down the first goal, I have to go watch it again, because some people actually said Casemiro should have been covering the space. But to me, the problem started where Asensio was tracking the run on the flank, and instead of continuing to track him, he made the mistake of trying to switch with Carvajal and sending Carvajal to go around the flank, and then they both just miscommunicated there. And then neither Nacho or Marcelo picked up Carlos Soler, which was ironic because just before Soler scored, I had tweeted out, wow, Real Madrid has done an amazing job at subduing Carlos Soler.
I mean, there were several problems with that goal, but the main one of the main problems, like you mentioned, was the fact that Asensio didn't continue his run, and Carvajal was essentially presented, you know, he had to defend an overload, which is obviously very difficult to defend. He was beaten down the flank, and then Casemiro did something that defensive midfielders would do if they were playing as a defensive midfielder. He looked at the situation, he thought, I think someone is going to come to the edge of the box and let me try to cut off the passing lane there. When in reality, as a center back in his position, needed to guard his zone near the near post. Mm. And so what happened was Soler, was it, who scored? He made a blindside run from essentially Marcelo's position. And, you know, he ran ahead of Casemiro, who didn't see him, and he finished into an open space. People, I think a couple of people said, why didn't Marcelo track the run? Because it's zonal marking. You know, if you did that, it would be so easy to manipulate us in the box. You have players who guard zones, and Casemiro didn't guard his zone because, you know, he had a moment where he was used to playing in a different position, and it just got him. Like, it's not something that I would spend, you know, days and days thinking about. It was a mistake. It was his mistake, but it's also an understandable one.
The Asensio nitpicking of that goal and defensively, it stops there completely because I thought it was probably his best defensive game ever. I've made like four notes for my column on Tuesday where he just did so much on the wing to help Carvajal out, but also just to snuff out possession, retain possession. And I mean, it goes without saying he carried the team today. Both of his goals were brilliant. And to this point where I just like I'm almost becoming desensitized to how great he is. There was a moment where I really strongly thought about changing my son Luca's birth certificate to Marco. I think this podcast in a way is on the fly because we realize last minute that we actually like really don't have much time to do this. So we're actually just going to focus on questions, and with the questions we'll probably cover the rest of the game that we haven't talked about yet. Yep. We're not taking any patron questions, any non-patron questions today. And the reason is because when Real Madrid collapse like this, the internet breaks and the amount of comments and questions for our podcast just reach levels of infinity. So we can only focus on our patrons. I'm gonna bunch together some of them, okay? Here we go. Let the shit show begin. All right, patron questions. Harish Gura says, please talk about Benzema's game today. Thanks. Very polite. Thank you, Harish. Chirag Balda says, question for podcast. What the hell is wrong with Benzema? Anton Hackberg says Benzema can't score goal, which is an inside joke if you listen to the previous episode, but seriously, this is the worst performance I've ever seen from him. Also, why couldn't our ball carrying players break down the defense efficiently until about the last 15 minutes? Sajid Reyes says, believe me when I say that I spend most of my time defending Benzema in my Real Madrid WhatsApp group, but 60 minutes in, he has missed four absolute sitters. How is it easy to defend him anymore when he keeps missing sitters like this? Yes, I get that he's important for the link-up play. At the end of the day, he's a striker, and especially in the absence of Ronaldo, he's supposed to convert absolute sitters. And one more from Chirag Balda. He says, what the hell is wrong with Benzema? So much frustration I have. I became a patron just to ask this. whatever gets you in, my friend. I know managing Madrid has over time many times highlighted his other contributions, even defensively. But what is the use of all that if he is a number nine that can't score when it matters the most and has so many quality chances he missed, which is not the first time this has happened. Also, when Ronaldo comes back, do you think Bale should be left out? He was totally invisible today. By the way, I love managing Madrid. You guys are amazing and you guys have made my understanding of football much better. Love your dedication, hard work, Keon. Wow. I like it. And then there's a lot of questions from non-pagers on Twitter and Facebook that really are really harshly aggressive, and borderline. Just, I'm pretty sure they all want to assassinate Benzema. I'm not even sure he made it out of the stadium alive. We should probably check that in Marca or something. Just make sure his heart's still beating. What were your thoughts on Benzema after this game?
So it's clear he played poorly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got a lot of tweets like, and there was like a comment on Facebook page, oh, are you going to like make a video on his link up playing defensive skills now? Like, as if we fucking like do that when he plays poorly. I mean,
no, but as if it cancels that video out for some reason.
I mean, like, see, that's the thing. I think it's, you know, when he plays poorly, he played poorly. Like today he was really fucking bad. Like, he missed a ton of chances, and my head was in my hands. And it's not hard for me to admit that. You know, it's almost as if people are resisting a balance of opinions when it comes to Benzema. When he plays badly, you say he plays badly, but also when he plays well, he plays well. I mean, him playing well in other games does not necessarily have much to do with him playing poorly in this game. I think you can acknowledge both of that. I would... You know, I'm totally fine with the Benzema criticism. Me and you, countless times over this podcast, criticized Benzema's performance last season and said that it wasn't good enough and that Morata needed more minutes and that arguably Benzema is reaching his decline and that we should start to look at another striker, which is why it's painful that we didn't get Mbappe. It's not like this is just 24/7 Benzema love fest. I mean, personally, he's one of my favorite all-time players, but, you know, we've acknowledged, you know, game over game that, you know, sometimes it isn't good enough from him, and especially last season it wasn't. Where this confuses me is when people take this game or last season and extrapolate that to his whole career. Like, you know, one of the, you know, I think it was a patron question, but he says he doesn't score when it matters. I mean, obviously that isn't true. He's an, you know, fifth all-time scorer in the Champions League. I mean, he
scored...
I would
almost say the opposite of that is true. He scores when it matters, and he does things like this in other games.
I mean, he just scored in El Clasico. He scored in, yeah. Behind Ronaldo, he's our top scorer in El Clasico. I mean, and then there's the fact that people can't seem to separate criticism from hate. Like, and this is not just a generalization, because we've seen it so many times and enough times that people, so 90% of the people criticizing Benzema can't seem to separate the criticism from hate. It's all like, I hope this guy's got a career-ending injury, which I'm not making up. I saw that today. I've seen that so many times. He's pathetic. He's lazy. You know, he's useless. I mean, that kind of stuff is not objective criticism. Objective criticism is saying he played poorly today. You know, he wasn't great last season, but there are also things he does well, and when he does well, you acknowledge it. And I think it's as simple as that.
I think you're expecting a lot from fans by asking them to look at it that way. Yeah, and it does amaze me. I think fans hear what they want to hear. I think a lot of them have their minds made up about certain things, certain players. It's ingrained in them. They'll look at things that don't go, you know, the player's way or the things they do bad, and it's like fuel to the fire. Those things just explode. And then they forget everything else. I would say, I think you and I spent a whole podcast last season figuring out our Real Madrid perfect 11, and Benzema wasn't any of it.
Yeah, Ronaldo, you know, both of us who are big Benzema fanboys, I think it's fair to say, or at least for me, and we had Ronaldo as a number 9 with Benzema out of it, because I think he is kind of reaching his year end, but it's... It is a new season. Benzema was pretty great up until this match, so we'll see what happens. And Mayoral is our backup striker, and he's definitely not going to be starting, so we have to see what happens with Benzema at the head of this.
Yeah, but that's my point. My point is he wasn't in either of our lineups, and people don't remember that. Like, they don't bring that up. And the moment we bring up something good that he does, it's like, it's just complete, like, we've committed a crime. And
Which is evidence that you have an agenda against a player and that you hate him. If you get offended by praise for a player, that means that you hate him. It's as simple as that, because we have criticized him in the past. And like every time we praise him, you know, we get thousands and thousands of comments every single time. Oh, you know, why don't you never criticize Benzema? Are you always going to defend Benzema? As if like they take this,
That's what I mean. They only see what they want to see. They only hear what they want to hear. And, you know, it is what it is at this point. I'd also say it's strange to me, like the pure hate on a personal level. I was trying to think back home to like the last time I actually hated a person or I hated a Real Madrid player. I really had to think hard and I still couldn't figure it out. I no matter how poorly someone played, I never really hated, like, the comments that come in about Benzema and Bale. And depending on which one performs worse on the day, it depends, you know, depends on which one gets it worse. But they're really, like, just personal and aggressive and violent and really just filled with hate from, like, the bottom of their soul, which I never got. I'm trying to think back at players that I really, really felt they were underwhelming and I really didn't want them to play for Real Madrid. One was like Arbeloa. The other one, I had to go back to Gravis and I had to go back to Raul Bravo, Miguel Torres. None of them did I ever truly hate the way that some of these fans do. And that always confused me. I never got that part.
I mean, I'd say the only time I ever felt something close to that was like the Pepe days, like in prime Mourinho time, because like he was a nasty player, he was violent, and like I really despised all of that. And then Pepe stopped doing that, which made me respect him more, you know, a lot more, and I actually like him now. But I wouldn't characterize Benzema as a violent player who goes and like kicks people on the ground. Like it really isn't rational. I mean, it really isn't. It's really just haters gonna hate kind of thing.
There are little non-Benzema questions sprinkled into the bunch of questions we just read. So Anton was saying, why couldn't our ball-carrying players break down the defense efficiently until about the last 15 minutes? I really, really think Valencia's performance will be underrated in this aspect. I think you saw like Asensio carry the ball really great. Isco didn't have a great game. Kovacic a bit when he came on. Modric and Kroos found it difficult and to break through, and they did on a few occasions, but it felt laborious, you know. It wasn't as easy as it's been against Barca or Man U or Depor. And I think out of all the teams we played, Valencia was the best defensive team so far, and which may surprise you, but really Marcelinho has zipped up this team well.
I agree. I think it wasn't like I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Personally, I think chance creation was sufficient, because when the opposition team performs this well, it's always going to be difficult. And I think we put enough chances on a plate for Benzema and Co. to win the game. And I think that in terms of our offensive performance, the reason we didn't win lies with the finishing. I think there's a little couple things we could have done better in midfield, in that our central midfielder's positioning was a bit too flat, which has always kind of been a problem because Zidane likes him to circulate deep. Asensio was crucial in that aspect because he was consistently moving away from the offensive line and into these pockets of space to receive the ball and progress play. So for me, whenever Asensio wasn't doing that or he was on a wing opposite of the play happening, we didn't progress because we needed that link in midfield. And it's something I till date feel that Isco doesn't do enough, because he gets too attracted to the ball. He likes to come really deep and receive the ball 5 yards from a player. For me, his biggest weakness is not that he dribbles too much or that he doesn't release the ball quick enough. It's that he's too obsessed with receiving the ball too deep, because even though he was playing as a central midfielder and not as a central attacking midfielder, that would still be his role as an interior to provide that kind of link from midfield to offense. And that's why I felt that Asensio was, you know, not only for his goals, he was man of the match, because he did that and kind of compensated for Isco and Modric not really doing that.
We're going to come back to some questions about the attack in a bit, including Bale. The question from Jason Morley says, can we at least give some praise to Nacho and Casemiro, who handled being left high and dry on counterattacks nonstop in the second half very admirably considering the circumstances?
Yeah. I mean, I think they deserve some credit. I thought Nacho in the air was suspect. He wasn't really like marking people, and Casemiro obviously made a couple of mistakes. But given the situation, which was not a good one, as I mentioned, we just let Valencia rip through the center of our midfield and go one versus one with them. at least 10 times. I'm not exaggerating. I thought they did pretty well considering that. I'm not sure. I think maybe Ramos on his best day would have done better. Like, I think only world-class defenders would have dealt with that situation better than they did.
Yeah, I think they were put in a position that, especially Nacho, I think I felt bad for him the most. With Casemiro in the back line, I noted a few times where he went forward without seeking any coverage, and that just because of, I think, instinctual tendencies of playing as an anchor, he's used to doing that, or used to having Modric and Kroos there behind him covering. As a center back, he has to be really, like, much more pragmatic when he does that. He was up on, like, almost every corner. There was one moment I noted in the fourth minute where he just ran up the field in possession and just left Nacho back there by himself.
To be fair, that's something that Sergio Ramos does quite often.
I feel like Ramos does it a bit more pragmatically, though, and more communicative. I don't know. It reminded me a bit on, like, in Balaidos last year, we played against Celta in that 3-5-2, and Casemiro was at the back line, and he just really didn't understand when...
I mean, he was playing as a libero, so not only did he have to defend, he was, like, the prime distributor, and he had the ball a lot. I mean, it was a disaster. I've never liked Casemiro. Even the idea of Casemiro as a center back, the few times he's played there have not been good. I don't know what Zidane was going to do today, how he could have got around that, but we can't do this many more times because it simply doesn't work. He's not a center back, and he makes mistakes there because, you know, he doesn't fully understand the position, and like I said, he's not a center back, so it's going to cost us if we don't find a way to get around that.
We're going to come back to solutions, potential solutions for this problem in a bit in future questions. Omar Asumani says, I admit Benzema is important for tactics when Ronaldo plays. Otherwise, nobody could actually benefit from his drifting, not to mention his finishing. I can only imagine what the scoreline would have been had Belotti-esque forward. My God, I can't talk. And Essa Hariri asks, first we wanted Mbappe, now we absolutely need him, and let Mayoral go. Zidane can't keep being too nice and pleasing everyone and keeping this team as it is. Yes, we didn't lose, and it's not the end of the world, and the season is still long, but matches like this reveal our flaws, and we need a striker and a defender. Wish we didn't sell Pepe. So, if I were to just kind of summarize these two questions, they're asking about what the solution is to the backup striker role.
It would have been to keep Morata by giving him more minutes. It would have been to get Mbappe, but Mbappe went to PSG. They offered twice the salary. There's other factors involved. I'm not sure, honestly. Andone is a pretty decent forward, but I'm not necessarily sure he's going to get you that goals in the clutch that people want. Backup strikers that are willing to accept minimal minutes and score at the rate Madrid fans want almost do not exist. Yeah. Morata is like the one guy I can think of.
I think that's the issue. I think everyone wants someone there. I think they need to tamper their expectations about what it is that they're going to get for that position. And, you know, a Morata-type striker off the bench was a huge luxury last season. It's not something you can have every season.
Mm-hmm.
Other names like, you know, for example, I would have loved to have kept Mariano. I think he can easily bag like 15 goals in La Liga if he starts consistently. I don't like, and Mayoral's not there yet. But the difference is Mariano himself said he wants to play consistently. So he had to go. Even that wasn't an option. Like, yeah. I think sometimes the board gets shit for not keeping Mariano. He wanted to play. Mayoral is basically the level you're looking at now, which is not going to cut it at this point. And I like Mayoral a lot. He's just not even close to being ready. I think the solution is ultimately going to be a lot of Ronaldo up front. It's just a weird situation right now with the suspension. There's a question from Sun. Hi, guys. Would going 5-3-2 have served us better? would it have mitigated the risk at the back, especially seeing Casemiro out of position at the second goal? Could we have still managed to create so many chances? Hala Madrid, regards, Sun. Thank you, Sun. I don't know if that would have been the solution. I would have. I think maybe putting an anchor there would have helped a lot.
I see what Sun is saying, because he's, you know, he or she, sorry about that, if probably thinking that if there's another center back there, right, to like kind of cover for Casemiro and cover spaces, it would be better. But what Zidane would have likely done is put Casemiro as like the center back between the two center backs, so basically as a libero, and he would have given him that like duty again. So he had to distribute a lot, and you know, he would have had to make decisions between stepping up and sweeping back, and I think it would have been worse. I think it would have been put more pressure on Casemiro, and he wouldn't have been able to handle all of it. The same way when we played with the back five and Casemiro was a libero, you know, that was a disaster. I think, like you said, the best thing we could have done was played an anchor. The guy who would have plugged the midfield, provided us with vertical compactness, and helped, you know, with our defensive solidity. I don't think there's any perfect solution to this with three of our center backs out. Really, the only long-term thing is to, you know, get our center backs back, which is going to happen because I think Ramos' suspension is served.
Funny you say that. This is my favorite question of the bunch tonight. I think it's a really good point. It's from Said Mahad. Said says, I would like you to address the real culprit of the Valencia game. We all know who he is. We all know he does this often. And we all know what must be done about it. I'm talking about Ramos. His foolish red in the game against Depor forced a situation where Real Madrid has to create a makeshift defense with Casemiro and Nacho. I believe that Real Madrid would have won 2-0 if Ramos hadn't been sent out. Do you agree?
I mean, that's a bit reductive. I think to like pin that all on one player, and it's really hard to like predict how a sequence of events, you know, several different interlinking events are going to be affected by one piece being taken out and plugged in. But I do think we would have done better. I think we probably would have won, but there was team-wide issues here. Definitely, we talked about this before, that, you know, this is the problem with Ramos. He's you know, 30 or whatever. He still hasn't learned. His maturity level still seems to be, you know, lower than, you know, what a veteran of his age should be. I think he takes some of the blame in the sense that our backline would have been better than him. But at the end of the day, the buck stops with the players on the pitch and the manager who sent them out there.
Here's the thing. Real Madrid were good enough to beat Valencia without Ramos and Ronaldo. If they were both there, obviously the chances are heightened that much more. This game was one finish away, one really, really clear-cut chance from Benzema at the end, away from being 3-2, and the crisis would be subdued a bit. Having said that, I think Ramos did set up some dominoes here. And in this case, it's not all on him, but I mean, like, you look at Vallejo was injury prone last year at Frankfurt, mm-hmm. too. That was always a concern for all of us. Like, we always said is four center backs should be enough theoretically, but you look at who the four are and it doesn't make sense because Varane has had injury problems, Vallejo has had injury problems, and then you have a yellow card machine in Ramos, and Nacho, poor guy, is reliable as ever. Let's go back even further than that. Modric kicking the ball out when he didn't need to at Depor.
I mean, yeah, a series of stupid mistakes. I mean, I guess you could also say, you know, if we go down this line, that Ronaldo shouldn't have pushed the ref, because then he would have been here and we probably would have won with him, you know, being presented the chances that Benzema was given. Huh. It's kind of a slippery slope. I think all these players, you know, who are out stupidly, like Ronaldo and Ramos, you know, deserve a little criticism because they hurt their team, they let their team down a little bit, but I wouldn't go farther than that to just place the entire loss on their shoulders because, again, you know, they weren't playing, and It football is a lot more complicated than that.
Couple of Bale questions. Julius Krakowski says, Bale often seems much more isolated on the wing than the opposite winger is. Also, his heat maps often show him being glued to the right line. Why? Shouldn't it be Carvajal's territory? Is that one of the reasons that keeps him from playing better and scoring more? And then Nick DiStefani, also a patron. What does it say about Zidane's perception of Bale when Gareth is substituted late in the match, tied at one and needing a goal? To the first point, I think the most dangerous that Bale looked in this game was when he had a few minutes on the left flank in the first half. And he was able to link up with Marcelo a bit, get some crosses in, and he had that one really good low-driven cross to Benzema who just scuffed it when he had an open goal, basically. That should have been an assist for him. I mentioned this to you a couple weeks ago. I still don't get it. He is from 30-40 yards when he's on the right and he has the ball. 1 or 2 years ago, he would have cut it and he would have just unleashed a rocket. I feel like he hesitates now. I don't know what it is. For the record, I don't think Bale had a bad game today. I'm not hugely critical of Bale as others were today. But I do expect more from him. I really think he's supposed to be the alpha male. I think he's the one who... I think God bless Asensio, he did it. But I think Bale should be the one who needs to carry this team. And I just don't get why he's a bit shy. I don't know if it's the whistles. I don't know what it is, if it's mental. I don't think he's been bad, but I expect him to be a top five player at this point.
I mean, Bale is really hard to like gauge and understand why exactly he's not performing to his full potential right now. If there's one thing you notice, it's that he's not as involved in the game as he should be. Whether it's like Ronaldo or Benzema or like Modric, it's when they want to take a game by the scruff of the neck, they do things that give them more touches and give them more influence of the game. Even though Ronaldo's become a lot more limited, there are still times where you see, oh shit, Ronaldo, that looks like 2011 or 2012 Ronaldo, because he decides, you know what, I'm going to start moving deep, I'm going to start connecting with players, I want to make things happen. And we know Bale has that ability. And it's confusing to me when he doesn't do that. And I think it's because he kind of struggles with kind of how fluid and free our midfield is, because it's constantly moving. All of these players are moving into different spaces to pick up, you know, the ball and try to progress the team forward, that Bale doesn't understand when and how he's supposed to insert himself into that kind of revolving door of players. Because You look at our you look at like five different possession, you know, plays that we have, and Modric, Kroos, and Isco and Asensio will all be in different positions, and it's always kind of Bale is out on the wing, and it could be that he doesn't know how and when he's supposed to, you know, drop into all those holes and connect with those players and make himself influential. So I'm gonna say that perhaps a bit more structure there could help Bale understand what his role is in the side. But, you know, at the same time, our fluid midfield really helps us a lot and it overwhelms opponents. So, you know, Zidane is going to have to sit down with him, or, you know, Bale is going to have to figure this out on his own. Because, you know, other than that, I'm not really sure what's the problem. I guess it could be a confidence thing, but I don't really see the reason as to why his confidence would be low.
One of my theories was, like, I actually thought the scheme theoretically suited him better today than it did against Depor, for example. Because you had 4-3-3, you had him able to roam on the wings a bit more, with Isco and Asensio already going down the middle. Again, I thought the only time he really looked good or really took advantage of being a player who can put his influence on the game was in the first half when he switched to the left a bit and started linking with Marcelo and putting crosses in. I think having so many ball carriers in the team can also hurt him. Asensio and Isco like to hold the ball a lot and like to bring the ball forward. I don't know if Bale has learned to connect with them yet. I think he can in the right scheme.
I mean, because we're...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go on.
I mean, that's the thing. I think in the right scheme, it works. I think in this game, you looked at it and you looked at Asensio and Isco bringing the ball forward, and he would come up with the play, but he was unsure where to make the run. And then there were often times where they just looked him off and they didn't pass to him. I think that affects him a bit. His whole career, he was used to being the alpha male at Spurs in Wales. He's ball dominant. They look for him. His confidence grows. His influence grows. I think him being just a piece of the puzzle, I don't know if I think that affects him. I really do.
I mean, I think that's the thing, because if you look at Ronaldo, I think part of his lessening influence across the pitch is down to his age and his decline. But if you look at him with Portugal, you see a much more involved Ronaldo. A Ronaldo has a lot more touches, who does a lot more on the pitch, because he can be afforded to do that. But with Real Madrid, Ronaldo has found a way to make an impact without being as involved, without necessarily having the ball as much. And I think Bale needs to find a way to do that, because when Bale gets involved, like you said, his confidence grows and he becomes a really, really threatening player. But he needs to find a way, because we have this midfield that want the ball so much, and that really it's to our advantage that they dominate the game. He has to find a way to make that impact and score a goal or provide an assist without necessarily being that involved. And I think that's a challenge right there, because I'm not really sure that throughout the season we're going to get those games where any of our forwards really get to dictate the pace of the game, because that's not really how Zidane's Madrid has ever really operated.
I think as a guy who really believes in encouragement, and I think part of the reason why Real Madrid is so successful, because Zidane is more of a encouragement guy than a bring the hammer down guy. I wish the Bernabeu and the fans were like that too. The flip side of that argument is that, well, come on. I mean, we do know this. I mean, this is a fan base in the stadium that's booed Ronaldo. And may I remind you that up until last week, Real Madrid was invincible, and now everything's falling apart.
Now it's a fucking crisis. The league's lost.
Yeah, everything is erased. Everything is undone. While I do wish the fan base emulated Zidane's character in that sense, the flip side of that argument is that the greatest players in the world will thrive under pressure and will take those whistles and turn that kind of that mental frailty into being a confident, dominant player. And that's what Ronaldo did. I'm worried Bale hasn't reached that. I think I worry that Bale's confidence is really at a point right now where he feels he's a piece of the puzzle, but in reality, he needs to feel like he's the best player on the pitch.
I mean, I guess you can make that argument, but I mean, I know you're not for all of this like hate given towards players. You're just playing devil's advocate. But for me as a fan, when your job is to help the team win by being the 12th man, I don't know why you'd openly hurt players, which is what we're doing. When we throw those whistles and we hurl abuse on social media platforms, I don't know why you do that. You can argue, oh, he's a player who's paid millions, he should be able to deal with it, but why? That's you serving your selfish need to hurt somebody, which is essentially, it's a cruel thing. It's an indefensible act. So that, as fans, we're trying to defend it with some kind of weird logic, when really our role is to help the team succeed. And if a player perhaps doesn't have the mentality, what do you punish him for it? I don't understand. Are we opposing teams fans, or are we the fans of Real Madrid who are supposed to help the team win? So, I'm not really saying that Real Madrid fans are the real reason that Real Madrid didn't get the result today. We still play a pretty small role in that, but goddamn, sometimes I really think that we could do a lot better.
I mean, the online fans play zero role. We know that. But here's the thing: if I'm in the Bernabeu, And the team is playing like a Champions League semi-final, second leg at home, pressure's on. A player messes up 90th minutes about to go into extra time. The last thing I'm doing is whistling that player. Because I know it's just going to hurt the chances of their confidence in the team, which, and that's the thing I never got. And that's the thing I always, we don't, you know, sometimes they make fun of like Man U fans who clap about everything. Pogba sneezes and it's like the standing ovation in Old Trafford. At least they're encouraging the team, and I think there is something there. And I think the Bernabeu needs to find that balance. Now, again, on the flip side, you're great enough, and you can stand up that pressure, and you can truly be a goat. Ronaldo has done it. Asensio is doing it right now. Then that's the counter argument is that, you know, it's like you can actually build a better footballer somehow who can come through this adversity, and that says a lot about that player's character. Okay, we got to fly through these last two questions. We're running out of time. Ross Cabrera says, "Hey guys, I've been listening to Managing Madrid from last season, and my patronage is well overdue. Love listening to you guys, and I am on board now at least. Keep up the great work. It's an amazing pod. Shout out to Om for his insight into Benzema the other day." Wow.
I reached someone. I reached someone.
Completely rethought my opinion of the role and how good he can actually be. Hala Madrid Ross. Wow. Not even a question. Just thanking you for enlightening him on Benzema. It's amazing.
If all of your guys' comments and questions could be like this, I think the pod would be even more incredible.
Last question. Jen, new patron. Welcome to the Managing Madrid patronage, Jen. She says, "Hey, some Ceballos-related questions. I'm very disappointed that he did not get a call up to the Spanish national team after such an impressive under-21 performance. What do you think his chances are now, given how few minutes he might get at Real Madrid? He has been impressive so far, but is it enough?" Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised that he hasn't been playing. He didn't play today, at least. I think he's a better player than Lucas Vazquez. I can understand what Lucas brings to the team, but I would say that Ceballos can do what Lucas does defensively. I'd also say that Ceballos's his vision on the pitch is incredible. In a game where Valencia really tight and compact, I think he could have really done some things to break them. I'm a bit surprised about it.
But I mean, they play different positions, right?
They do, but I think Ceballos is versatile enough that he could fill in that role. Like, you need a goal, you need offensive spark, you need some wing play, you need some defense. I think he can do it all.
I mean, I don't know. I really see him as a Kovacic player, like the guy you put in a central midfield role, and he just causes chaos in every single way for the opposition. I think it is a bit strange he hasn't been called up, but this has kind of always happened with talents because the Spanish team is always stacked with a lot of talented central midfielders, and it always kind of takes a while for those players to get into their club. And I think national teams just always want to see whether a player is playing for their club or not. And you know, like Jen said, that could affect his minutes. You know, I'm still really intrigued to see how Zidane manages to juggle this midfield over the course of a season because, you know, how is Ceballos going to get the minutes? How is Llorente going to get the minutes? And it will affect their fortunes for the national team, undoubtedly. And I think that does kind of paint a slightly bleak future for Ceballos' international hopes, at least for this season. But I think he's got enough talent that eventually he's going to get on that team and he's going to be one of the prime instigators for success.
I mean, you look at the players he's competing with in Spain too, that's important to note. So, Isco, Koke, Iniesta, Thiago, Herrera, Cesc, Trigueros, Carlos Soler. What a great game today. It's been great the last couple of games, great last season. And then you have players who obviously aren't as good like Denis Suarez and Sergio Roberto, but who can play there. So there's a lot of competition. I would say the only players who are clear cut above him right now are Thiago, I think Isco. Iniesta still is playing at a high level. I do think he should have been called up though. I think I just really hope the playing time thing doesn't really hurt him too much, but okay, we got through it. We got through the fire of this heated podcast and all the questions that came in. Quick note, thank you for listening. And we are launching our additional midweek bonus pod for our patrons this week. I think Gabe and I are doing it Wednesday. So the only way for you to listen to it is actually become a patron. Thankfully, I think there's a lot of patrons now. Like, and so there'll be a good chunk of you listening to our midweek pods. But if you do want to join for midweek content, it might not hurt you so much this week because there's no games to cover. But there will be a lot of midweek games this season, and if the only way to get on that pod is to become a patron. So, Om, thank you. I know you took an hour out of your busy, 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 busy schedule today. I know that's important matters to attend to at 9 o'clock Eastern. So, whatever it is you're doing now, I hope you enjoy it.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Keon.
Of course. Anytime. Halamari.
Om, dude.